You're listening to Beyond the Jargon, a jargon-free look at graduate students and their research journey here at UVic.
All right, I am your host today, Liz MacArthur, and I'm pleased to have in the studio with me a PhD candidate here at UVic, Jim Kempling. Thanks for being here.
I'm delighted.
There's a very timely thing that's come up, I guess, in part of your research and what you do here at the university, and that's a new website that has been developed. Can you tell me exactly what your role was in the website development and the information that's on it? Because it ties in with Remembrance Day.
The website is called A City Goes to War. And that's just acitygoestowar.ca. The focus is on the area of Victoria during World War I. So we're trying to give people a feel for what it was like to have been in Victoria during that period. We start the timeline about 1910 and finish it about 1925, so we have some material on the lead up to the war and the aftermath of the war, mm-hmm. as well as the war years themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it's digitized information. I sort of looked through a little bit. So what was the process of gathering all that stuff and then putting it into like a digital format for people to look at?
Well, the first thing is we got some money from Veterans Affairs to help us do this.
Oh, yeah.
So we got a group of six students who worked most of the summer on this project. But we had support from all the local libraries and archives and an amazing number of little wonderful museums that are scattered around Victoria. We discovered a lot of things we didn't know were there.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody in the community has pitched in to help provide the content that's on this site. So we have over 2,000 primary source documents.
Who is your audience and what do you want them to sort of learn from it?
Well, our audience is everybody in Victoria. Mm-hmm. We have a specific portion of the site that is aimed at high school students. Mm-hmm. And what we've put together is a program that will allow a history teacher in high school to download some material from the site and then turn their students loose on it to build a fake book page. And fake book is a rather interesting free online tool that you can use to create a Facebook-like site, mm-hmm. about a historic character.
Oh, yeah.
So we will have perhaps photographs, letters, newspaper articles, diaries from a particular individual, and the high school students will be asked to go and look at that material, read some of the background material, and then build a fake book page and fill in the gaps with their imagination, mm-hmm. so that they imagine what it might have been like to be that particular individual during the war.
Hmm. It's an interesting project. Have you partnered with the schools in advance of this, or did you create the site and then just make it available to schools?
No, we went out and talked to a good number of history teachers, real life history teachers, and real, mm-hmm. life high schools, mm-hmm. to get their input on what would be useful. Now hopefully that we've got the product done, they will start to use it.
I noticed that there are a couple of as yet to be filled parts of the website. When you can look at cities, I think it was Toronto and Winnipeg were two of the other cities listed, but there's nothing there yet. Are you intending to fill that with other information?
Yes, our ambition is to make the site about cities at war. Mm. So now that we have the model developed, we'll be going out to other communities across the country and saying, why don't you replicate our experience? We think you'll find it fun and interesting to do that. So we've designed the site so that others can pitch in. Hmm. Winnipeg and Toronto are there because I happen to know they've got pretty well written histories about Winnipeg and Toronto, mm. in World War I already done. So,
hmm. And so why did you want to do this? What sort of sparks your interest specifically in a project like this?
Well, I'm probably the if not the oldest, certainly one of the oldest grad students in at UVic. I'm 71.
Whoa!
So
you don't look 71.
my grandfather served in World War I, and I inherited his diaries. After the war, he was a private soldier,
right?
And so I have all these little books that would have fit in the pocket of his battle dress that I inherited. And It occurred to me as I walked past a number of bronze plaques on the walls of buildings in Victoria that we really don't know who these people were anymore. We've forgotten about them.
Right.
Every November the 11th, we say, at the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. But the truth is, we've forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And the image we have of World War I is Canada born on the bloody slopes of Vimy Ridge. And the national story is very powerful. A CBC reporter once said it's written into our DNA. But what happened locally is long past. And people don't even remember that Sir Arthur Currie started off as a high school teacher in Sydney and a high school teacher in Victoria and a real estate agent in Victoria before he went on to fame and glory and commanded the Canadian Corps.
Hmm.
He was a Victorian, and yet you would hardly know that in Victoria today.
Right. And is this part of a broader focus of your research here at UVic?
Yes. I'm particularly interested in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
This is my second website on World War I topics, but the focus of my PhD research is on Victoria and World War I. And this project was a convenient way of getting a whole bunch of other folks to help me do my research.
Right. Smart. Can we talk about how you came to be doing your PhD? You said you're one of the oldest PhD students at UVic. Why are you doing this now? Have you been in and out of school, or what have you been doing before you got to this point?
Well, I started off my career in the armed forces. I retired as a colonel, went into the provincial government, served as an assistant deputy minister there. I ran the P&E for a couple of years, so I've done a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And retirement is something I don't believe in, so this is a way of keeping the barnacles off the brain.
Right.
And it's something I've always been interested in, and it's a lot of fun.
Did you start your master's here at UVic, or had you finished that before you started your PhD now?
No, I did my master's here, finished it a little more than a year ago, and the thesis for my MA was a website, the first time UVic has accepted a website as a thesis. So that was a bit of a challenge, but kind of fun doing that.
Huh. What was that website?
It's called birthofaregiment.com, and it's about Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry and their formation in 1914 and the experience of the war for that regiment.
Hmm. And now you have two websites under your belt. That's impressive.
I actually have three.
Oh.
I started off as part of my MA program, did a course with John Lutz, who's sort of the great guru of historical websites.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that course, one of the requirements was to have a team of people build a website.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I cut my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll now be translating that into a course starting in January, where students will now focus on Victorian World War I and build additional website material as part of the course.
Hmm. You talked about your grandfather, or the notebooks that you inherited from your grandfather. So do you have a long history of growing up in Victoria and living here, or were you from another part of Canada?
I came here as a cadet back in the Middle Ages at Royal Roads.
Oh, right.
So I've been in and out of Victoria a lot. I've probably lived here a total of, maybe 20 years total in Victoria, but all over the world, Germany and Australia and all across Canada and various other places. So,
And so why did you settle in Victoria? Just a nice place to be, or?
Once you've lived in Victoria, you will always come back. This is the most beautiful place on God's green earth to live, I think. And it's a wonderful place to raise a family, to live, and you just can't get any better. And I've lived in a lot of places. So
what happens now? How much longer do you have left in your PhD? And what is your hope once you've finished? What will sort of the project look like once you're done?
How long will it take to finish a PhD is a movable question. Another couple of years anyway, probably three. My ambition is to finish my PhD before my my grandson finishes his BA.
Oh, okay.
But a couple more here. I'm done the coursework.
Right.
So I'm now into studying for comprehensive exams and then getting into my dissertation. But I hope that by the time we're finished, this website has incorporated several other cities into it.
Mm-hmm.
We have also reached out into the community and gathered all those shoeboxes that are sitting in people's attics now to include them on the site. And we've got what at that point should be the richest storehouse of World War I material available.
Hmm. You were talking about discovering little things that you didn't know were here in Victoria when you're talking about connecting with like museums to get this kind of information. What were some of the things that were discovered that you didn't realize were here?
Well, it's interesting. If a few years ago, Oak Bay commissioned a history of Oak Bay, and it paints this picture of a bucolic behind a tweed curtain sort of community. But in World War I, Willows was a fairground that was the major concentration point for troops going off to war. So there were thousands and thousands of soldiers in what is now Oak Bay. Cattle Point was a rifle range. That seems to have just disappeared from the consciousness of Victoria. What's now the Backpacker Inn, I think this is right, was the Kaiserhof Hotel.
Hmm.
Not a particularly good name during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a riot. The Kaiserhof Hotel was trashed by an anti-German riot in 1917.
Hmm.
The level of anti-Asian racism that existed in Victoria is quite staggering when you read it today.
Mm-hmm.
We've got another project in the department going on about the Panama Maru. I think later this month they'll be putting on a performance about the trial that occurred in Victoria, but that led directly to very, very rigid anti-Asian immigration policies in Canada that ultimately led to the Kodagama Maru being escorted out of Vancouver Harbor by a Canadian Navy warship, the Rainbow.
Hmm. That's interesting. It's interesting to hear about all of the about these stories about the World War I era in Victoria, because I think Victoria is a city that does focus on its historical past, but it seems to be mostly focused on Fort Victoria era. Like if you go downtown, if you take any kind of tour around, what they're talking about is the you know, the bricks on the street where the fort used to be, and then the Maritime Museum, which used to be the courthouse. But there is, I agree with you, this sort of gap that it's lost from our consciousness that things were happening, you know, in World War I and World War II. It would have looked very different than it does now, and very different from the fort days. Is there anybody else that's sort of doing this work on sort of constructing the historical, I guess, context of these times in Victoria?
Yes, in fact, we're not the first one. The library was involved a couple of years ago when there was a production called Mary's Wedding that was set in World War I. So the special collections at the library has quite a good World War I collection. We've had other websites. Ben Izzet, who's now a city councillor, built a website about the Siberian expedition that left from Victoria just at the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been some material. The interest in an earlier era is something we fostered at UVic, in fact, because John Lutz's earlier work was Victoria's Victoria. So we had history students out building website material about the city of Victoria before 1900.
Mm.
So that interest is something that we actively fostered, and we're now shifting our focus to a later period. So hopefully we can replicate that result for the World War I period.
Hmm. You mentioned that you were in the armed forces. Did that give you particular insight into looking at a place during wartime and, I guess, maybe understanding things that civilians would not understand?
Perhaps. My MA research was on a regiment that went off to war. And that regiment drew its soldiers from all across the country. So I started to look at the individual records of these soldiers to ask, where did they come from? Why did they join up? Why did they join this this particular regiment? So that really got me into trying to understand the lived experience, and I realized that it was very different depending on where they came from. Folks in Winnipeg would have had a very different experience than folks in Victoria.
Hmm. What was the difference? Why were they? What were the reasons that they were signing up?
Well, in Winnipeg, the focus would have been there was a very large segment of the population that had immigrated from Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So the concern about that element of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, are these folks really loyal Canadians? Loyal Canadians in that period, meaning speaking with a British accent, and not much else. The idea of a diversified country was pretty far from the core understanding.
Mm.
Whereas in Victoria, not much of that kind of population. Here, the focus was on the Asian population and that issue because of our position on the Pacific Rim. So there was racism in both areas, but a very different sort in Winnipeg than you would have experienced here.
On the City at War website, is there are there accounts from people who might have been targets of racism and things like that? Or is it mainly focused on people who went and served who might have what, I don't know, maybe in many people's minds, sort of the, I don't know, like a typical soldier who isn't dealing with those kinds of issues?
Yes. One of the challenges when you do this type of thing is to reach out and penetrate the sort of underrepresented communities.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find lots of articles in local newspapers about relationships with the Chinese community in Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all painted with a particular paintbrush, and you have to penetrate through that. When you read some of them today,
mm-hmm.
you just rear back in horror at the what appears today to be blatant racism, but in that period would have been accepted as normal.
Right.
And the same thing is true if you try and find out information about First Nations in Victoria.
Mm.
What you find is what's in the official record, and that all tends to be painted with the official paintbrush. So digging through that material is one of the challenges that historians have. It's a lot easier to find letters and notebooks from upper-class well-to-do Victorians than it is to find the same sort of material from the people who may have been the cook in the kitchen or tending the garden or something like
mm-hmm.
that.
Were you able to find any of that material?
We have some.
Yeah.
But our hope is that by putting this website out there and saying to folks in Victoria, dig through your closets. We're interested in looking for material, that we'll get more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's always a challenge for any historian is to penetrate through the official record that is fairly easy to come by.
Mm.
We have official records of virtually every soldier who served in the First World War. You can go online and find the document where they signed up.
Mm-hmm.
But getting behind that is more of a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Do you reach out then to those sort of community groups within Victoria, First Nations communities, the Chinese community, to see if they have that kind of material to add to the website?
Yes. Yes, we do. But that's been a challenge. Frankly, we haven't been able to get a lot
mm-hmm.
At this stage. We're hopeful with some of the publicity around this website, we'll get more. But we have had people come to us and say, here's a whole bunch of material I have. The Scott family in Victoria has given us access to a tremendous amount of really rich archival material. So we can follow the story of Blaney Scott and how he went off to war. And we'd like to find that sort of material about others in the community, others in the community as well.
Hmm. Did you find anything that really surprised you or that stood out as something you weren't expecting, or was most of the material you got what you were expecting to find?
Well, one of the stories that I used in the unveiling presentation was the story of Charles Adams. There's this marvelous painting from World War I of the ghosts of soldiers going up the slopes of Vimy Ridge, and on the top of the ridge is this magnificent Vimy Memorial. And when people think about who are these ghosts, the image that comes to mind is a young person in their early 20s, inspired to go off to fight for king and country. But Charles Adams was a 41-year-old accountant when he joined in 1916. By 1916, it was pretty obvious to anybody what the numbers looked like, and an accountant certainly would have been able to look at the odds, and yet he joined up in 1916 and went off to war. Hmm. And a year later, he's one of the ghosts on Vimy Ridge. So it changes your perspective from that typical, it was all the young men who went off to war, to realize that it wasn't. There were married men with three or four or five children who went off to war. There were people like Roland Burke, who had terribly poor eyesight, tried to enlist in the Canadian Navy, and they wouldn't have him because his eyesight was not good enough. So he went to England and joined the Royal Navy. The Royal Navy has a different view of eyesight because Nelson, of course, only had one eye.
Uh-huh.
So he joined the Royal Navy and won a Victoria Cross.
Wow.
And then came back to Victoria and spent the rest of his life working at the dockyard. So a very humble man, the most untypical heroic figure you could imagine. Even his photographs don't look like a heroic figure, and yet he's one of our unsung heroes, a Victoria Cross winner buried here in Victoria.
Wow. Yeah, that's an incredible story.
Yeah.
We're out of time. If people want to find out more about this, what's the website?
The website is acitygoestowar.ca, and there's lots of contact information on there if you want to find out more about it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if people have material that you might be interested in.
Yes.
That as well.
That contact information is there as well, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Not at all. Delighted.
Again, thank you for listening to Beyond the Jargon on CFUV.